Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper.
May 23rd, 2014. And as usual, here are the headlines we're going to be looking at. It's all about the NSA, Obamacare, and monetary policy. Because those are our favorite topics lately, and besides, they're what are in the news. And the music continues and continues. I love it. But the big news that came out this week was actually came out today, didn't it, Bill, that the Privacy Panel, which is a U.S. Governmental organization, actually said that they said some not so nice things about what the NSA has been doing. And that's a little bit newer, not newer, but a little bit unusual compared to what we've gotten before, because so far the only complaints we've had from government officials have been the stray Republican deviant. We haven't heard anything directly from the powers that be, and they're kind of close to being one of the powers that be.
Yeah, I mentioned this last week, that there was a report that was being hidden, and I didn't know when it was going to come out, presumably by the end of the month, but this was the privacy panel that was set up, 2004, 10 years ago, they passed the law. They had their first meeting last November. And I pointed out that Obama probably met with them and asked them not to release the report until after his speech, because it was totally contrary to everything in the speech. It basically, the bottom line was that this privacy panel, which was set up by Congress, is independent. It's kind of its own little bailiwick, not under the supervision of the president or anybody else, although all the members are appointed by the president, concluded that the government's vast collection of records about phone calls made by Americans is illegal and should be ended with all the records purged. This is the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board that reviewed all of the NSA.
I love that last bit, all the records purged. But yeah. Why am I suspicious that even if it were to be ordered, it would never happen?
Oh, well. you understand.
I mean, let's be
honest. You know, the president and the NSA only have to comply with the law. And, of course, they are very much supported by a fairly large segment of the Congress. In wanting to continue this program. So when they write the law, like they did with the FISA law or the Patriot Act or any of these other things, they write it in such broad, vague terminology that nobody can contend that the NSA or anybody else is violating the law. So that's what led to the problem in the first place, and more likely than not, what's going to come out of Congress, if anything, and get the president's signature is going to be a wishy-washy, fluffy, you know, vague, indefinable piece of legislation that pretends to do something about the problem of you know, either abuse or leaking of government secrets like Snowden has done.
And as you pointed out, they've written the law so broadly that they can get away with anything they want to get away with. But there's another factor involved, and that is they may not have violated the law, but it has become more and more apparent to the vast majority of Americans that they have violated the truth on numerous occasions. And that indeed it is a habitual thing with them. So even if they were to announce that all the records were destroyed, I'm not sure how many Americans would actually believe it.
Well, you know, I'm sure Clapper would go up there and testify that, yes, they've you know, eliminated all of the records and terminated the program as much as was possible within the national security requirements.
Which means not at all.
Exactly. But, you know, on this issue of the law, the report says that it makes an interesting point. It says that the Patriot Act, Section 215, which talks about the telephone metadata, does not authorize the NSA to do any of these things. Moreover, the NSA program, according to this report, violates federal law called the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which prohibits telephone companies from giving customer records to the government except in response to a specific search warrant. So they really went whole hog condemning this entire program up and down and backwards, not the least of which was the issue of whether or not it was effective at accomplishing anything.
Not the least of which, and the fact that they mentioned that they felt that there was actual law being violated, that in itself is pretty cool, because as you pointed out, the law was written in such a way that the NSA could basically do pretty much anything they wanted to, and yet despite that, this panel decided that they violated the law anyway. That's quite a finding.
Yeah, yeah. The most critical thing is that it gives the lie to all of the claims by NSA and all of the NSA supporters that this actually was beneficial and useful in terms of stopping terrorism. Now, yeah. Here's a quote from the report. We have not identified a single instance, not even one, involving a threat to the United States in which the telephone records program made a concrete difference in the outcome of the investigation. Moreover, we are aware of no instance, none, in which the program directly contributed to the discovery of a previous terrorist plot or disruption of a terrorist attack.
A previously unknown terrorist plot. That's
right.
The word that's really interesting, unknown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They've tried to claim that they actually helped in, you know, this and that, the other thing. But it was all stuff that was already known.
Yeah, well, it was either already known or the FBI had the information. They just didn't give it to the NSA or vice versa.
Right,
This board came about as a result of the 9/11 Commission report, where they talked about stovepipes and they talked about connecting the dots. And with what the report points out, that all the instances where there was a problem with getting the information about a terrorist plot, it wasn't a matter of not having enough dots. It was not a matter of not having enough information. It was a matter of one agency simply refusing to talk to any other agency. In other words, they weren't connecting with themselves. You know, the NSA was not talking to the FBI, was not talking to the CIA, and that's why none of these dots got connected. Every agency had its own little dots and guarded them as secrets, and would not even disclose them to another government agency. So that's something that they point out. I can quote from the report. The failure to identify a particular terrorist, as an example, Khalid al-Mindahar or something like that, presence in the United States stemmed primarily from a lack of information sharing among federal agencies, not a lack of surveillance capabilities, the report said. This was a failure to connect the dots, not a failure to connect enough dots.
And the interesting thing about that is the argument that 9/11 happened because of the failure to connect the dots, the failure of the various agencies to talk to each other, that in and of itself was basically a justification to cover up what many people say were the real causes of 9/11, the real deal behind the scenes. And I won't say that I can sit here and tell you what I think the real causes were. I can't say that I know what really happened. But I do know that there's enough discrepancy in the reporting to severely question, shall we say, the official version of the story. So to hear this particular argument that was trotted out to dispel the rumors, to basically fight back against the truthers and the people who advocate the idea of a conspiracy, in the government conspiracy or whatever, that same argument is now being turned around and used as an argument against NSA activities. That's a really interesting twist, an interesting change that has taken place.
Yeah. No, I'm not a truther. I read through the entire, well, not the entire, summaries of the commission report, and I don't see any errors there that are of any consequence. But what the commission report totally minimized was this absolute failure of the government to get its act together. This connecting the dots and the stovepipes didn't have anything to do with terrorism or information. Like I said, it had to do with the CIA not talking to the NSA, not talking to the FBI, not talking to the CIA. They just wouldn't talk to each other. So another amusing thing is that the report specifically, and I just read the quote, discarded the proposition that this Khalid al-Mindahar case was solved by the NSA. This guy was a taxi driver in San Diego, And he was in connection in communication with a supposed terrorist cell somewhere in Yemen. And they knew who he was. They knew that he was in contact. And all they had to do was go and get a warrant to identify his phone calls to Yemen. They didn't do that. Now, this case was among the first things that Obama mentioned in his speech last week, saying, here's a case where the NSA was invaluable. Its collection program was absolutely essential to stopping this terrorist plot and this terrorist activity. The terrorist activity consisted of this taxi driver in San Diego sending $8,000 to Yemen. That was a terrorist plot.
Yeah, well, I could see where that could be threatening. I mean, Yemen might actually have some money. That'd be different.
Well, he was actually sending it to a charity in Yemen that was supposedly going to help out the people that were being oppressed by the dictatorship there. And so whether or not it was actually, you know, relative to any kind of terrorist operation is totally dubious. But I thought it was funny that this, even after Obama had access to this report saying this Mindahar thing was a total fraud, he nevertheless cited it as a fantastic success for the NSA. So it's a severe embarrassment, if nothing else, for Obama and the NSA apologists.
You know, you mentioned Obama, and you took some time this past week to basically piece together some of the more interesting quotes and separate out truth from fiction and so forth. Why don't we touch on some of the key points you were able to elicit from his commentary?
Well, there was an error that I made in characterizing the NSA program. If you remember, we were talking about three cases in the Supreme Court that supposedly authorized this kind of activity,
right.
And it was Katz, Smith, and Jones. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that after the Jones ruling was issued, and basically that said you can't attach a GPS device to a private automobile without a warrant, they decided that they were not going to collect from all these different phone companies, these billions of transactions. They asked the company specifically to exclude all of the GPS cell tower information from the records they were being sent. Now, it's a minor exclusion, but it's interesting that they precluded that. The other thing
I think you can be forgiven for having misreported that one. that would be a detail that was buried in the news.
Yeah, well, although the report itself has some interesting thing about the two-hop, three-hop thing. They say that according to the FISA court's orders, records are moved from the bulk collection thing daily with searches. There are automatic searches of thousands of telephone numbers. And those are connected by two or three hops, roughly 120 million records that are transferred into what they call the corporate store. And once they have that in the corporate store, they can use any of their capabilities without going to the FISA court or anybody else in order to search that data. So it's even worse. All those three hops go into this big bucket, and I can't remember that Snowden had a name for it, Key Store or something like that. And once they get it into that bucket, they can do anything they want with it. Now, here's a quote, since we mentioned Snowden, a quote from Snowden who did a little chat with a group, I guess, via Twitter or Facebook or something. Snowden says, when even the federal government says the NSA violated the Constitution at least 120 million times a day, this was, under a single program, but they failed to discover even a single terrorist plot, it's time to end bulk collection, which is a euphemism for mass surveillance. There is no simple justification for continuing an unconstitutional policy with a 0% success rate.
And that's pretty significant all by itself. Kind of what your reference there to the corporate store kind of reminds me of the old Ernie Ford song, 16 Tons, which talked about owing your soul to the company store. I guess we could probably rewrite this to you owe your liberty to the corporate store.
And I was trying to remember. I could go back and look, I suppose. But one of the Snowden revelations was this corporate store. They had a cumulative search, and here's the only place where the FISA court actually impeded their efforts. They had a list of like 2,000 different telephone numbers, and they would put that in as a search criteria automatically every day against every phone call record that they got. So there were literally 120 million phone calls every day that were automatically transferred without the FISA code reviewing anything, without any NSA analysts pushing any buttons, and all of those calls went into this corporate store, or Keystone, or whatever it was called. So it's impressive that this report actually got out and didn't get quashed by Obama or NSA or anybody else, because it really puts the lie to all the defenders of the NSA program. It isn't effective. It isn't legal. It isn't constitutional. And so it's really, I mean, it took 6 months of Snowden revelations to get this kind of attention and to motivate this group to make a report. But I was quite impressed. Not only that, but the commission is five people appointed by the president. Three are Democrats, two are Republicans. The majority report was the three Democrats.
Yeah.
Republicans said, well, it's not all that bad. But having the three Democrats that Obama appointed coming out and saying, this whole thing is ridiculous, it's illegal, it's ineffective, dump it, get rid of all the records, purge everything, just get it over with. So I'm impressed.
And it's an embarrassment to the Obama administration. The only really downside to this whole thing is the fact that, despite the fact that this is pretty important news, pretty major news, it's only getting circumspect coverage from the major media. And I imagine that's by design. I imagine that this was coordinated, as so often is the case, by the various press secretaries and press contacts of the government working with major media, basically taking steps to make sure that the story, they knew the story had to come out, but it only goes so far and then it gets dropped. And that's my concern. My concern is this is not going to be remembered. It'll be remembered by you and I, and by our listeners, but I'm not so sure it's going to be remembered by the American people.
Yeah, well, the board doesn't have any power. All it can do is report.
Right.
But nevertheless, the I'm trying to think of the word. The overwhelming impact and gravity of this report in terms of the NSA program totally wipes out the Presidential Review Board that Obama set up a month ago, totally wipes out everything Obama said in his speech. And yes, it's true that the establishment media, the military-industrial complex, including media, doesn't want to hear this. And there have been stories, I think, in just about every media outlet, but maybe one, and very little follow-up. But there are still a host of media outlets that are not going to let this go. And there are a host of organizations, such as the ACLU, Freedom Foundation, so on, that are going to use these reports, this report in particular, in their court cases. And there are a dozen different court cases on their way to the Supreme Court. And with this analysis, they just appended this, you know, here's our brief, and, oh, by the way, here's a 283-page report agreeing with us.
Yeah.
And so it is going to have an impact. Even if it fades from the major media news, it's going to color all of the claims that people like Mike Rogers and Dianne Feinstein have been saying. This is a fantastic program, you know, there's no abuse, it's perfectly legal, we're overseeing everything, everything's keen and dandy, nothing to worry about, we should just make the law comply with what they're actually doing. And that isn't going to happen.
And along the lines of what you're talking about here, I love one of the quotes you pulled from the Obama speech. which you labeled as a, correctly labeled as a false quote. He says, a small secret surveillance committee born out of the Sons of Liberty was established in Boston, and the group's members included Paul Revere. I love that quote because, among other things, it suggests that Paul Revere and his buddies were basically listening to everyone's phone calls. They were reading everybody's mail.
Well, the example is totally upside down. I mean, this small surveillance committee was a group of citizens who were fighting King George.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Revere, I mean, Paul Revere is a good example of Snowden opposing the secret surveillance state of the United States government.
So, oh, yeah.
So his example was just totally upside down. You know, he did
but
say
it was things. Also, it was also humorous because, I mean, the idea that the Sons of Liberty were basically surveilling the government, surveilling the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and surveilling the king's men, and that they were basically listening to everything they were doing and intercepting all their mail and basically
keeping
all this together in order to find terrorists amongst them. It's like ludicrous.
I mean, the Revere and friends were the terrorists.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
As far as King George was concerned, you know, that's how it was.
Because that was the official government. So, yeah, terrorism is always defined in terms of who the government is and who their enemies are. Whoever their enemies are, they're the terrorists.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Obama's speech was you know, his usual poetic nonsense. So he did say some things true. He did say some things false. One of the true statements was our system of government is built on the premise that our liberty cannot depend on the good intentions of those in power. It depends upon the law to constrain those in power.
The only thing missing from that is that there's nothing in the law to constrain those in power.
Well, it's an interesting echo back to when Obama was a senator. Because when he was a senator, he was condemning these programs up and down and backwards, and how Bush was a dictator and he was violating everybody's privacy rights, and it was obviously a constitutional violation. These were all things he said in the Senate,
right,
in opposition to the FISA court legislation and a bunch of other stuff. So it's interesting that he would put in a sentence like that. To what his position had been.
Of course, because as soon as he became president, he adopted all the positions that he was previously opposed to, and he supported them, and he actually defended them, and he refused to reveal them. In fact, he did everything he could to cover them up.
Yeah.
So it was complete hypocritical about face.
Yeah, well, here's where Obama's a master of rhetoric. You know, it's dialectics. Mm-hmm. For example, and just to give you some quotes from, I want to jump over a few of the ones I've got, but he said in his speech last week, I indicated in a speech to the National Defense University last May that we need a more robust public discussion about the balance between security and liberty. Now, this is a key rhetorical phrase, because whenever you hear somebody defending the NSA, they will talk about a balance between national security and individual liberty, as though the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution is something that needs to be just pushed aside a little bit in order to ensure that we're protecting you from terrorists. Well, aside from the balance being ridiculous, there is no security as a consequence of these programs. The idea that you just set aside a constitutional guarantee of security for your person, your paper, your effects, and so on, without any warrant, without any legal process, without any particularized suspicion that anybody has been involved in a crime. So it's a little bit of rhetoric that everybody uses if they're trying to defend this NSA. I mean, you can't just accept the Fourth Amendment and follow it. You have to balance that off with what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. But the thing that's also interesting about that statement is he said, quoting the one piece of it, I said last May that we needed a more robust public discussion. Well, okay, what's taking you so long? Because we haven't had one yet.
Well, Snowden took his message to heart. you know, when he said last May that we need a more robust public discussion, so it suddenly says, yeah, sure, I can help out with that.
but doesn't this imply that the president himself will actually participate in the discussion, maybe even lead it?
No. See, we cannot prevent terrorist attacks or cyber threats without some capability to penetrate, quote, or unquote, all digital communications. I mean, he's saying we can't do our job unless we get everything.
So, in essence, when he said he wants to have a public discussion, what he really meant is that he wanted to give a public lecture.
Well, that's what it means. There's nothing going on
here at all.
Yeah. I mean, his basic statement, if he connects the whole speech down to a few words, what he says is, we have a serious challenge here, and we need to review options in order to improve the confidence of Americans that this is a good program.
Ah, in other words, it's another con game.
Yeah,
well, it makes sense. Like, I mean, this from a great defender of the Federal Reserve, it makes sense. You know, they're both con games. Why not? They're like two birds of a feather.
Yeah, well, Obama's speech was kind of on the heels of his presidential review board, which was very wishy-washy, even though it said some things that were true and correct. It was basically a whitewash report. And so he extracted some little tidbits from that, rejected most of the substantive things they said, and, talked about executive branch oversight. Right. The president and director of national intelligence are going to overview this program to make sure it's done effectively and done economically and done properly. And
it's very effective whitewashing is what it is.
It's a whitewashing group that did
their job properly and got raises like good little boys and girls.
Well, you notice that the second thing that Obama said was that we need to provide greater transparency. He noticed that they declassified over 40 opinions and orders from the FISC and a panel of advocates to provide the information that people need to know about. Well, all of these opinions and orders have already been released. All of the classified documents that the NSA is releasing are a consequence of them realizing that Snowden has all this information. So what they did was they picked out the ones that supported their case and declassified all of those and released them. And said, this is our demonstration that we have fantastic transparency. Of course,
I love that number two.
Any of that before Snowden.
Well, I love that number two. We have declassified over 40 opinions and orders, as if there were only like 50 or 60 of them total.
well, we're talking about
billions.
Another interesting thing that the Privacy Board pointed out was that the FISA court approved requests from the NSA, such as the Verizon demand, which isn't really a warrant, it's just a demand. And they demanded they turn over all of their telephone transactions internationally, nationally, domestically, and local calls, all of them. Now, that is a boilerplate document that they also issued to every other telephone service. So the quantity of information is deceptive. For example, if they say, well, we only had 40 orders from the FISA court, those orders covered literally trillions of telephone and internet communications.
And that puts it all in perspective. Listen, we're halfway through the show. Let's take a break, and then after the break, let's hear from the other side. Let's hear from Edward Snowden and from his critics, too, because that's what makes it really fun. And we'll see what the other half of the world, well, the other half of the argument has to say. This is the Freedom News Hour, Surviving Meltdown, here on the Progressive Radio Network, and we will be right back. Talking about the revolution. We're back here on the Freedom News Hour, Surviving Meltdown. And now that we've heard from President Obama and from the NSA and from the official government bodies and their critique of, isn't that a nice word, critique? Their critique of the NSA program. Let's hear from the other side of the argument, because obviously this whole thing got started when Edward Snowden decided that he was tired of being basically a traitor to the principles that built America and decided to become the savior of America and essentially release information that the government didn't want released because it would be embarrassing to what they were trying to do. Bravo. But he has been under a little bit of attack, and he also had a little statement to make of his own. Probably the most interesting attack that he had this past couple of weeks is that he's a communist spy.
Yeah. It's really crazy. His representative, Mike Rogers from Michigan, has the capacity to say the most ridiculous things, which is the reality that he wish existed.
Well, he wants to replace Peter King when Peter King leaves Congress, you see, so he's trying to vie for that position.
Ah, I see. And Dianne Feinstein backs him up. You know, the two of them are, I don't recall, I think they're both head of the intelligence agencies that have been proving all this stuff. But Mike Rogers told Meet the Press, I think it was last weekend, there's questions to be answered here. I don't think it was a gee whiz lucky event that he ended up in Moscow after the handling of the FSB. He went on to imply that Snowden had help from Russia and that he had turned over all of the information he had collected from the NSA to the Soviet Union. Well, the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore.
There are two little problems with that. First of all, the Soviet Union doesn't exist.
Right.
And second of all, there is such a thing as evidence.
No.
I mean, I know he's a master storyteller because that's how he got himself elected to Congress in the first place. But surely, somewhere along the line, he's got to have at least a tiny tidbit of evidence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can, if you followed what actually transpired, Snowden had no interest in being in Russia. It was a stopover point. He got stuck there because the United States told France and Germany and Britain not to allow any flight with Snowden on it out of Russia. So he was forced to be in Russia for, I don't know how long, a couple months, I think, against his will. And now they're saying that the fact that he went to Russia and stayed in Russia and actually got asylum from Russia obviously indicates that he was a communist spy and obviously indicates that he turned over all this information. I mean, Dianne Feinstein backed up Rogers saying that Snowden may well have had assistance from the Russians in getting all this NSA information. Now, Snowden had a reply. He had a reply to that. You want to do Snowden's reply?
Sure.
It's not that the smears mystify me. It's that outlets report statements that the speakers themselves admit are sheer speculation. Snowden went on to poke fun. He said, quote, we don't know if he had help from aliens. You know, I have serious questions about whether or not he really exists. You know, and that's essentially, you know, the kind of stories that the supporters of the NSA have to create and fabricate totally out of thin air to discredit Snowden's revelations.
Plus, it's really amazing to me. No, I shouldn't say amazing because I've seen so much of it since we've been doing this show that I've become almost cynical toward it. But in one sense, it's still amazing that these same people who are using this argument that he's holding up in Russia, so therefore it must be Russia who helped him to extract all this information from the NSA. These same people, about 8 months ago, were saying that was the reason he went to China, because it was actually China who was helping him.
Right, right. Hong Kong.
They want us to kind of sort of blur in our minds China and Russia because they're both communists, you see. Never mind the fact that they don't really like each other.
Well, I mean, what they don't want to talk about is what the content is of the information Snowden is revealing. They want to talk about Snowden, how he's a criminal and a traitor and violated his oath of office and, you know, did all these terrible things, and he's obviously, you know, an insane lunatic, and he's, you know, egotistical grandstander, and they want to talk about Snowden. They don't want to talk about the NSA.
Well,
they don't
want to
talk
about
the documents.
When you don't have any facts on your side, you have to engage in ad hominems, personal attacks. That's all that's left. There's nothing else to use.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, this surprises me a little bit, that neither the NSA nor Obama nor anybody else in the administration has claimed that the documents Snowden has released are in any way fabrications. In fact, They did early on,
but then when all of the documents that he released were later verified, they kind of stopped doing that because that tactic didn't work so well anymore.
Yeah, and now they're trying to say, well, you know, we're interested in transparency, so we revealed 2,300 pages of documents, 44 orders of the FISA court, 11 pleadings. This was all released by Snowden.
Yeah.
Along with training slides, other internal documents, and so on. So what they're trying to say is, you know, we are the you know, doing a fantastic job at disclosing all this information, which nobody knew a thing about prior to May of last year. So it's just silly.
Well, it is silly, and it kind of reminds me of the old cliche / quote, and I can't remember who originally said it, but basically the idea that they're trying to find which direction the people are marching so they can get in front of them and lead them.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. We were talking about some quotes from the Obama speech, but there was one that we missed, and I think it's true. He said, "The world expects us to stand up for the principle that every person has the right to think and write and form relationships freely, because individual freedom is the wellspring of human progress." If he'd gotten up and said that, and then concluded by saying, "And contrary to all of these principles, we have a program which violates those rights, and therefore I'm closing down the NSA." But of course, you didn't do that.
That would have been news.
That would have been news.
That would have been news we'd be talking about for weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, instead, we're actually going to get part two. This privacy board is issuing two reports. This first one was just on the telephone data. The second one is on the so-called 702 data from the Patriot Act or the FISA Act or whatever, which deals with the Internet. Now, I don't know how long it's going to take them to put together the second report, but it's like the other shoe's going to fall. So even though the media isn't covering this particular component, even though a lot of other people are going to point it out and use it prolifically, there's a part two that's still pending.
And that part two is where the real hope is, because I'm saddened to say Americans have gotten to the point where telephone spying is nasty, but it's not something to just jump up and down and light your hair on fire about. The Internet, on the other hand, that's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah,
and there are enough people who have a lot invested in the Internet and who have a lot invested in Internet privacy and in Internet integrity and so forth. That's where there could be a much larger backlash. At least there's hope for that.
Well, yeah, it's possible. Well, the arguments, the straw men that Obama and the NSA and everybody else brings up is that this is just metadata. You know, it's just a few numbers that we get from the phone companies. You know, it's not identified with any person, like they never heard of a reverse telephone directory. Come on. And, of course, it's being supervised by a court. Well, this is a court. It is a one judge who gets his marching orders directly from the NSA. And even when the judge points out that they're lying to him, they change around the program to suit the NSA. So the oversight from the judicial system is something that's persistently brought up, it's totally irrelevant to any kind of legal proceeding. It's not even a court per se. And then they talk about congressional oversight. Well, congressional oversight, I mean, even the leading people on the intelligence committees came out shortly after Snowden's first few disclosures and said, we never heard of this. We had no idea this was going on. We have, you know, we got reports from the NSA that were a page long, eight paragraphs, and that was their annual report. So we had no idea that this, you know, these kind of orders from the FISA court were being issued. We had no idea how many phone calls were being collected.
Which is not totally equal. Because if they're only getting a one-page report, they should know there's a whole bunch of stuff missing. I mean, any time that a major subordinate hands you a one-page report saying, well, this is what we've been doing the last year.
We only spent $850 billion doing it, of course.
If you are questioning that, then we need to question your sanity.
Yeah, and your patriotism.
And your patriotism. Yeah. Absolutely. I think this entire show is going to be devoted to the NSA and Snowden, because we've only got about 10 minutes left anyways. We aren't even going to get to Obamacare or monetary policy or anything else. So continuing on this theme, Edward Snowden issued a very interesting statement this week in conjunction with that interview that he had. He said that he basically called for limits on spying worldwide, which is an interesting claim to make, in part because there is no way to enforce it, but also because it makes me wonder, is this something he really wants to push, or is this a way to basically distract from him being, you know, public enemy number one and the focus of all the ad hominem attacks? I don't know which way I'm reading it, but what do you think? Which way is it? Is this like a serious plan of his, a focus of his, to actually get a discussion going on putting limits on spying? Because if it is what he's trying to do, I think it's probably one of the first mistakes he's made. There's really no way to do that.
Well, I mentioned last week or the week before, I mean, there are good reasons why the United States government needs to spy on foreign governments, because politicians lie. And if they are particularly, you know, aggressive toward us or threatening toward us or whatever, then we need to know exactly what their plans are and that sort of thing. So in during Snowden's chat, he said, I'm not saying that spying should be totally stopped. I'm saying that it shouldn't be done against Americans. It should only be done when there is a significant threat from a foreign, you know, government, a group, Al-Qaeda, whatever it is, and it should be done under the existing laws without violating Americans' privacy.
Well, he went beyond that, though. And this is from the USA Today article on the subject. He said he called for what he described as, quote, a reasonable international norm for the limitations on spying, unquote, because national laws won't protect us against indiscriminate surveillance. That's really goes well beyond what you were saying. This is basically saying we can't protect ourselves with national laws, even here within the United States. He basically was throwing in the towel on that one and saying instead we have to back off on that particular thrust. I'm pushing for changes there, and instead push for international law changes. Well, not only is that weak, not only is that unreasonable, not only is that unlikely to happen at all, but, boy, I really expected a lot more from Snowden than that. I don't know about you, but I really did.
Well, he may be thinking, okay, governments can't control themselves, so there needs to be international, UN, whatever, criteria protecting people's privacy. And there actually is that. I mean, there are all kinds of UN resolutions stating that government should not violate their citizens' right to privacy, should not be surveilling their own citizens.
And yet the UN has a long history of basically abetting national governments in doing exactly that, violating their own citizens.
Well, I don't know. And Snowden may have more respect or admiration or faith in UN resolutions, but of course the UN can't do anything that the individual governments don't approve.
And frankly, God forbid that they ever do get that level of power. There are large numbers of people who are trying to accomplish exactly that. They're trying to essentially take us to a one-world government situation under something like the United Nations. Well, yeah. You know, if we ever get to that point, you can just throw what little bit of tatters of the U.S. Constitution are left, because there won't be any. Well, you know, the only rights you'll have will be the rights that the U.N. defines, and they're like the right to have food.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, I think I've watched almost all the Snowden interviews that Glenn Greenwald did, and the other appearances he'd done before the British Parliament and the EU Parliament and so on. And the interesting aspect is that prior to this heartrending decision that he had to do something, he was not a vocal supporter, but had expressed in multiple venues, you know, Facebook and Twitter and things like that, his support for the NSA, his support for, you know, the spying program, and his belief that it was really aimed at terrorists and was really going to be effective in terms of stopping terrorist plots. So he had to come off of that mindset in order to do what he did. And one of the things he discussed during the chat was that he went to supervisors and he went to people, and they were appalled. They were upset. They thought something should be done, but they didn't want to lose their jobs. And so nothing happened. So Snowden has, you know, an interesting background and an interesting, you know, commitment to the NSA. I mean, he had a security clearance. The other interesting thing that did come out from the chat was I had speculated, or there had been reports from other sources, that Snowden actually called up various people and got their passwords, because he was a systems administrator. We're doing a test. We need to verify that the password system's working. What's your login and password? And in this chat, he said, no. I never did that. I never asked anybody for passwords. I never stole anyone's login or anything like that.
Well, he didn't need to.
He didn't need to. He was a system administrator. He was the one that maintained the passwords file.
Right.
And that's why, you know, it took a while, and maybe a couple of months, for the NSA to realize the extent of the data that Snowden had accumulated, because they didn't have any internal system checks. They didn't have any way to determine who had accessed the data. They didn't have any idea how much information Snowden had retrieved. A few months had passed by and he'd released, you know, a few dozen documents, they said, my God, he's got everything. The only thing he doesn't have is the actual phone records. I mean, he didn't download the Keystone or the corporate store data. So it wasn't, he wasn't interested in getting that information, but everything else. From court orders, FISA orders, congressional discussions, memos, presentations, commentary. He's got everything. Now what the hell are we going to do? Well, we better start releasing some stuff so we can pretend that we released it before he did. And so that seemed to have been the primary response. But, yeah, Snowden's not a... some people say we should put Snowden on Mount Rushmore, you know, or give him a parade, or make it a Snowden Day. maybe on the date that he released the first information or whatever. But he's just a kid. He's just a kid that was terribly upset with what he had discovered about what the NSA was doing, and realized that there was no way within the system for him to have any effect upon that program. There was no choice but for him to totally abandon his country, his girlfriend, an excellent job, very nice income from the NSA, and fly to Hawaii and fly to Hong Kong. And, you know, Hong Kong, he pointed out, the CIA had a major headquarters office two blocks from the apartment where he was staying in Hong Kong. And when he left for Moscow, he wasn't on the way to Moscow. He was on the way, I think, either to Brazil or Argentina or Iceland or something. I'm not sure exactly where. So he had no intention whatever of staying in Moscow. And the U.S. sent out you know, withdrew his visa and sent out notices to every government that he was planning on, you know, flying to, saying this guy's a criminal and you have to turn him over. And if you recall, there was actually an incident where I think it was a Brazilian ambassador who went to a UN meeting in Europe, and when he was ready to fly home, the U.S. government got some speculation from some media report that he was taking Snowden with him from Moscow. So on the flight home, they got to the border of France and were notified that they could not land in France. So they turned to Germany, and Germany said the U.S. will not allow Snowden to get out of Moscow, and you cannot land your airplane in Germany. And so they turned toward Britain, and Britain said, no, we think Snowden is aboard. We don't have any evidence. We don't have any proof, but your plane is not allowed to enter British airspace. And so they had to return to Moscow. I mean, the U.S. actually went to that degree to demand that all these European countries shut down a flight by an official government ambassador to the United Nations because of a vague suspicion, and this is all that their whole thing is based on, a vague suspicion that Snowden might be on the flight with him. That's astounding.
Well, I guess also, though, it proves the original point, right, from what's his name from Michigan, the idiot, right? Because
yeah,
he's the one who claimed that, that this was Rogers. Yeah, that, he claimed that this was all a conspiracy between Snowden and Russia. Well, I think he just proved his point admirably, don't you?
good God.
Well, we got about a minute left, actually probably less than that. Any last words you want to dispose of before we conclude this week's show?
There were a few comments from various other organizations, the ACLU, Electronic Frontier Foundation, Center for Democracy, Internet Infrastructure, a lot of people.
Have problems, so you'll have to pick one.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to pick any of those, but they had some very nasty comments to make about Obama's speech. Instead, I'll quote Rand Paul. I think what I heard was, if you like your privacy, you can keep it. The Fourth Amendment requires an individualized warrant based on probable cause before the government can search phone records and emails. The American people should not expect the fox to be guarding the hen house.
Yeah, well said. And Bill, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Thank you.
We'll see you all next time here on the Freedom News Hour, Surviving Meltdown. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.